Welcome to Echoes of Time, your podcast dedicated to history and those who lived it. In this episode, we will explore the fate of the first convicts sent to Australia during the late 19th century. Condemned in Britain, they were deported to the other side of the world to serve their sentences on this land still unexplored by Europeans. Who were they? How were they living? That's what we're about to find out together. We have found for this episode a really rare text relating the arrival and the life of settlers in what was at the time called the Terra Australis Incognita. This text is a piece of a journal written by one of the few women sent in Australia. Her name was Anne Mullin, and she had been condemned to exile for fraud. She was the first, with 789 other convicts, to go to this unknown land in 1788 and to live there. She was taken there by the First Fleet, a group of 11 boats, and the first to drive that many convicts to a penal colony. Her boat was the HMS Sirius, the flagship, which was under the control of Arthur Phillip, the captain of the fleet. After an almost 9 months long trip, the expedition finally arrived at the destination.
20 January 1788. At last, we've arrived. After spending several months at sea, we finally saw land. We were asked straight away to unload the boat. My legs are trembling under me after so much time spent on deck and in the hold, but the order is not to be delayed. The air is heavy, strangled scent with wood and salt. It is so different from London. When I was convicted for a petty theft I didn't commit, I thought my life would end in Newgate Prison, but the court decides otherwise. Exile. Far away from everything. Far away from this grey, noisy city that I had come to know so well. Now I'm working on unfamiliar ground. It is called Australia, they say. A wide land where everything has to be built. And that's our work to build it. All around us, officers are busy giving order to set up what will become our camp. For now, and I can see, are huge trees, strange vegetation, and in the distance, a few dark silhouettes watching us silently. What will our life be like here? What will be treated like animals for the rest of our lives? Or will be there some hope of redemption?
As Anne Mullin says, a lot of convicts landed in Australia in a pitiful state. Inside the ships, the living conditions were terrible, especially for the convicts. They were crammed into the ship's holds, had to suffer food deprivation, and therefore scorbuts, and they were harassed by rats, lice, and fleas. But even given those poor quality of life, only 48 people out of the 1,400 passengers died during the trips, which gives us a mortality rate of 3%, a record at the time. Later in these extracts, near the end, she mentions a few dark silhouettes. We can now know that these people looking at them with curiosity were Aborigines from Eora's people, a population residing in what is actually Sydney's area. They were divided into three principal clans, Cadigal, Winnegal, and Cammeraygal. Given the location of the convicts and the notes we found about them in the textbooks, they were probably Winnegal.
April 1789. The day passed, harsh and tiring, but I still survived. The camp expanded and we start to work the land. After a lifetime spent in the city, I am now wielding a pickaxe and a shovel. The soil is hard to work, but some of us learned from the officers how to make it suitable for agriculture. All day we dig furrows, plant maize, tomatoes, and few seeds that the settlers have brought from England. Water is rare. The heat sifting and the food is difficult to produce and scarce. Life is hard. The soldiers always keep an eye on us, but some are more lenient than others. I've learned to avoid those who take advantage of their power. With the other women, we have formed bonds, sharing our relations, our fear, and our hopes. We often talk about the Aborigines we see roaming around the camp. They watch us, discreetly, and sometimes we find trace of their passage in the morning. I've seen certain women exchange glances and gestures with ours, a silent understanding that the men don't perceive. This land is not ours. It never has been. We are only intruders here, and I fear that the precarious balance we have built will one day collapse.
When the first fleets arrived in Australia, everything was to be constructed. Housing, roads, tools, and, the most important, agriculture. It is this last point, the lack of food production, which led the newborn colony to lose many of its residents. For almost 2 years, famine was raging. It was only once the population managed to produce better tools, learned the adequate way to cultivate the soil, and produced sufficient quantities of food that the colony started to really get strong and to evolve. Anne Mullin then talks about the first real contacts with the natives. At the beginning, they were marked by mistrust and curiosity on both sides, but in some cases, like in Anne Mullin's cases, we found the existence of a positive bond between the two populations. Nevertheless, the settlers' arrival on this new territory had a terribly destructive impact on the natives. The sudden inflow of alcohol, the propagation of European disease, and the colony's expansion was largely responsible for the decline of indigenous people.
July 1792. 3 years have gone by, and I'm no longer the same woman. Labor have hollowed my hand and tanned my skin, but I stand stronger than before. I've learned to cultivate not only the land, but also a semblance of choice. Our colony is growing, and despite the hardships, we've built houses of wood and mud. I'm no longer just a convict. I'm a woman, a wife, a mother. But my heart is heavy. I watched helplessly as the inevitable happened. The settlers expanded, nibbling away at the land, pushing the Aborigines further into the forest. They have been assaults, burnt farms, and violent brothels. My husband says it's necessary, that we need to secure our future, but deep down something in me shudders every time I see a group of Aboriginal family leaving the land they occupied long before we arrived. I like to think that we could coexist, that we could learn from each other, but the white man doesn't share, he takes.
When Arthur Phillip arrived in Australia, he came with the order to build amicable connections with the indigenous living there. But after the colony's growth was assured, settlers stopped fearing the indigenous and started to look at them as enemies. Even though the relations between the colonists and the natives were tense from the start, they took a completely different turn once the colony properly installed. Killings began to be perpetrated, and the Aboriginal people started to be gradually disposed of their land. By 1911, the original pre-colonial Aboriginal population, which was around 400,000 individuals, had fallen to 31,000 due to the new diseases, dispossession of the lands and massacres. Still today, the natives suffer from consequences of colonization. They are marginalized, put aside from society. They have limited access to education and healthcare. They have a shorter life expectancy, and their unemployment and incarceration rate are much higher than for the rest of the population. However, they keep fighting for their rights, for justice, and for recognition. Here comes the end of this episode. Thank you for listening to it. We will meet again next week for our upcoming podcast, which will be about Rwanda's colonization.